Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode.
Hello and welcome to this Scrappy ABM webinar on visualizing strategy and visualizing alignment. I am so incredibly excited to be joined by my two friends over from Mural. So real quick, let's do some intros. For those of you who don't know, Mason, founder of Scrappy ABM, and I'm not going to hopefully talk a whole lot today. If you listen to Scrappy ABM, you hear a lot from me. So I brought in a couple of experts. You can actually learn a couple of things today. So Christina, can you intro yourself real quick?
I feel the excitement, Mason. I'm Christina Bottas. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer at Mural. Been in B2B tech for about 2 decades and happy to be here with my pal, Chris.
Yeah, thanks so much. So Chris Gerasi, I've been in SaaS sales for the last 15 years and most recently at Mural as the VP of sales for our new land team. So really excited to share some more about how I've used ABM to grow really high performing teams.
Love it. So for the audience, real quick, why are we talking about this idea of visualizing alignment? Like, what does that functionally mean? We've got marketing and we've got sales and executive leadership here today. And we do, I'm sure you've joined a webinar previously that was all on marketing and sales alignment, but it was a group of marketers talking about how they align with sales. And we typically don't hear from sales on that. So one, we wanted to make sure we actually have both represented in the room for the conversation. And then second, the reason this is so critically important, and I already referenced it in my LinkedIn post this morning, so if you haven't seen that, here's the hopeful key takeaway that you'll get from today. Most conversations between marketing and sales are just that. It's a conversation where people just kind of talk at one another. And when I, and Christina, you can attest, when I walk through a strategy or a program or an idea, I conjure images or thought processes or workflows in my mind. But often when we talk to other people, they conjure different workflows and different images and different processes in their mind. So we all leave the conversation saying, we're 100% on the same page, like everything's good. But we had different ideas of what was actually going to go and happen. So the goal of the webinar today and the panel is to like work through, one, how do we do ABM and get marketing and sales aligned? And then two, how do we make sure that when we actually all say we're aligned, we actually know what alignment looks like? So that's hopefully the guiding theme for our conversation today. So really question one, and Chris, I actually want to pass this one to you first. How did your previous experience with ABM inform what you're now doing at Mural?
Great question. So it's funny because ABM is actually how I was introduced to visual collaboration in the first place. I was rolling out an ABM strategy at my previous organization, and it happened to be in the middle of COVID. And so we started the planning before COVID, and then COVID hit and we all kind of dispersed from our offices. And so one of the things you said about like the different images in your head when we're kind of thinking we're aligned and talking at each other in those conference rooms, that was very much the experience. But it worked because we were in the same conference room talking about the strategy, bringing, you know, a PowerPoint slide, if you will. But when we were in our home offices, we had different images in our heads. And so, you know, that informed kind of why I came to Mural and why I, you know, got into the visual collaboration space in the first place. But it's really informed like how I align teams now and how we not only for an ABM strategy, but just strategy in general, get the team on the same page because we can really align around like a visual. So more tactically, I think it really has started with, hey, let's get out on a piece of paper what we think this looks like. And what if we're going to roll out an ABM strategy, what's our one-to-one strategy? What's our one-to-many strategy? How do we make it full funnel and get it from not only like the first advertisement that they see, but all the way through, what does that demo look like with the sales rep once we do get it? So that's really what's gearing me up for what we're about to roll out here at Mural and really thinking about these new personas that we want to, you know, build for and making sure that we're thinking about not only how we do that in a full funnel approach, but how do we do it together between my team and Christina's team?
Yes. Our team.
Our team.
One team. I love it. And yeah, I mean, I think, Chris, you just hit the nail on the head, which is 6 years ago, whenever we'd have a revenue team meeting, we all got in the conference room and there was typically a whiteboard and we literally whiteboarded it out. I want to be super clear. I drew some of those things and they were ugly, but they were there. Like, y'all look at it and be like, oh, cool. Like, we understand like the actual, oh, we're going to do this thing. That's going to lead to this line that will create this result. And to your point, you're not doing as much of that today in a remote environment. So that's, I think, something we can do a lot today. So Christina, I'm curious for you, your past ADM experience, how have you brought that in to Mural? Because for additional quick context, it was a largely new go-to-market team in and of itself. So I'm curious how you brought in that experience to help get everybody aligned.
Luckily, I have a bunch of really smart colleagues, as you heard, you know, Chris kind of detail out what we're trying to do. But I mean, I have, for better or for worse, been of the belief that like ABM is just good marketing strategy, just good strategy. I know lots of people have said that was the trending talk. What was it, 5 years ago? We were at Uber Flip doing all that stuff. But I think part of what is so important at what Chris and I have been spending the past few months to his point about before we launch is, okay, who is it? What's important to them? What are their pain points? How can we communicate our value? Where are they? Where do we want to swarm? What happens at this point in the journey? And these seem like very simple questions, but the simplest questions are very hard to answer a lot of the times, especially if you're going through some sort of, you know, GTM transformation. So the partnership between our teams is critical because, and what I appreciate of Chris and his team, they're all very communicative about what they're seeing. Because, I mean, marketing, for lack of a better term, is kind of Instagram versus reality. We live in a very controlled, curated world in marketing, right? We get to make the ad and we get to deliver it and we get the chance to put the words together. If you're a rep and you're slinging cold calls, what you say every time is not going to be the same thing. And maybe it was off a little bit, or maybe you stumbled upon a word that really resonates and now you're using it all the time. And it's that type of two-way communication that we are so desperately dependent on to make sure that this is resonating in a real world. Because if you're a marketer and you've ever taken your deck or whatever you're going to say and gone in front of a real human and said the things that you wrote in the talk track, you realize that's not human. And so it's an interesting challenge, right? To be able to take a largely digitally executed plan and get it to be the most human in real life, because now we're integrating humans, but also the best digital and marketing messaging is at that most human, clear level.
When I talk to a lot of marketers, they're living, again, primarily in the world of statistics. And we look at 30% close, that's incredible. But then you talk to sales and they're like, I lose 6 out of 10 deals. So
yeah, we talk about this so much and I sound, you know, soft and feely saying it, but I just believe that there should be a mutual empathy in these groups, because most marketers have not worked in sales. I have, and that experience is probably a luxury because there is no bigger stress than not knowing what's going to happen every day. It's a hard job. Conversely, marketing, it's hard to be in marketing too, because you've got folks going, what is it? What's the value? You know, you worked all week and someone's going, was it worth it? So you've got both of these crews doing super tough stuff. But if you can both agree that we're doing hard things, but let's try to do it together and we'll have a better result, I think that's really important. Go talk to customers. That's the unifying thing when you talk about ABM. And so if nobody is actually aligning to here's what the customer actually wants, and that's because I've talked to them. I mean, I'm calling in live from a hotel right now because we're on the road talking to customers. And that's usually where marketing and sales, you see the rift, right? Because they don't feel like they have that same skin in the game. It's the easiest way for our craft to earn credibility is get yourself on some appointments, talk to some humans. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And in today's environment, I mean, it's a team sport, right? Like they're the days of the lone wolf sales rep that just goes out on the road and closes deals themselves is dead. And so I think it starts by building that trust, right? And that getting on calls and having alignment around that is how you do that. And then I think it also gives the measurement pieces and what are we tracking towards? So yeah. One of the things that Christina and I spend a lot of time with in our teams is building that trust amongst our teams and that communication around what's important, right? And that's with a weekly meeting where we talk about pipeline and we talk about the things that are going to actually drive our business forward.
Yeah. I want Chris and his team to know that we're not excited unless we're all crossing a goal line. And that means pipeline and business and revenue. We're excited about top of funnel metrics for sure, because we need those as inputs, but it's not enough. And that's usually where, like, I don't really care about getting credit for a part of a funnel. Who cares, right? It needs to be there, but we all win when we close the deal. And I think that's usually, it just seems like a very self-serving thing to be like, oh, my goals are done. Check, talk to you later. Good luck, sales, juices. It's not your partnership and it's not for the business as a leader. Like, it's not good enough. It just simply isn't.
Totally agree. Yeah. And the more that you get that out of the organization where it's not about getting credit, it's about getting to the goal, the better the team operates, the more trust and empathy they have for each other. And in my experience, the more high performing they are.
I want to be super clear. I agree. Now, here, but as I talk to a lot of people about literally, we just talked off a call. They may watch this, but literally just talked off a sales call where they said, our AEs are really protective of their accounts. So they actually don't want marketing support at all. Or I've talked with plenty of marketers that have said, yeah, I can't get sales bought in. So I'm curious, how are you guys talking about this specifically internally to actually get everybody on the same page and then align around who owns specific metrics? Because I agree with you, if it's one team, it's all one goal, but also responsibility in that goal and should be measured slightly differently than sales.
So yeah, I don't disagree. And so let me just start with that in general of, I mean, luckily we, Chris and I don't live in a world where support is not wanted. So great there. But what I have had that experience. And again, I get it. I wouldn't want anybody touching and messing up my flow either if I didn't trust. Or I find it's easy to earn some street cred with sales is to be able to tell them something about their customer that they don't know. And quite frankly, like, this is, again, back to the idea of unifying elements, is at the end of the day, I do whatever the customer wants. I'm not doing it because I want to. And if we're saying the way that people are behaving right now is they tend to be on these digital channels and they tend to, I mean, I've said to Chris a million times, if faxing comes back, we're going to fax all day, baby. That's what we're going to do because the customer wants to fax. But I think that's where you can root it in, hey, you and I, salesperson, are trying to get in front of this customer. You're going to get in front of them in some very experiential, qualitative ways and meetings and things like that, and probably get to know them in a more intimate level. We are going to help you. I think the most tangible way for me to show the value in the stuff of all the advertising is that first 5 minutes of a cold call when you go, hi, I'm Christina and I'm from Mural. Pause. And if they go, why does that sound familiar? Or I think I saw something. Oh, yeah, I just read an article. Or I just saw you at a trade show. Those are the things that getting over that hump, it means a lot to getting to the next step of the sales process. So I always try to bring them, like, here's what we're learning about behavior and here's what they're doing. And this is why maybe they're not answering your call or doing this thing. And then it becomes us trying to get them versus me trying to get in front of your customer. It's a very different relation, you know?
Yeah. And when you say things like pause after you do your opening on your cold call, you earn street cred with salespeople because you actually, a lot of salespeople don't do that. But no, I think you nailed it, Christina. I think it's really about understanding the motivations within the account. Whenever I've seen this really go poorly, it's because we're not aligned. We're not communicating between the two teams. And to your point, Mason, people are only worried about what they're accountable for, right? And so marketing's over here doing, a bunch of webinars and events and sales doesn't even know. And sales is kind of blindsided by those types of activities. And so I think it all really just comes back to how aligned are you at the leadership level, at the strategy level, and then how do you communicate those goals downward, right? When I have seen it go really well, it's really centered around what the goal is within that cohort of accounts or accounts specifically. And then when the AE and the marketers kind of get into the same room and talk together and get something out on a page of what they're going to go do, and it's communicated, it builds trust. It makes it less of a contentious relationship.
We talk about alignment at the leadership level and then sending that down. We already referenced it at the start of like the game of telephone sometimes. You know, CMO will say something to the VP of marketing. The VP of marketing say something to their director. Director will say something to their marketing manager. And then the marketing manager heard something completely different than what was intended. And then we expect the marketing manager to actually own the ABM program and foster organizational change with AEs that he or she has never spoken with.
Yeah.
Toss.
What could go wrong?
So this is why I really like the idea of strategy visualization, because it helps kill the game of telephones. I'm curious how you guys are doing this and actually visualizing the strategy and then communicating that across the different teams.
And I can also add to like one of the top pieces of feedback I've heard from our customers on why this idea of visual collaborate, because I'm new to it, right? I'm new to Mural and I've never previously used a visual collaboration tool in this level of robust nature. And what they say is a pilgrimage of an idea of, hey, it's going to start at the leadership level. Like you have this, I mean, I love symbolism, but like the idea of the brand and calling it Mural is kind of on purpose. It is on purpose, right? It builds over time. And then you have this artifact of we've added to it, we're changing, but it's also the one source of truth that you can go back to. And yep. What I never realized is the majority of us are actually visual learners. That's the more dominant way. And there's cool science behind this, right? That like your brain translates images at 300x or something crazy like that. It was just, again, this conference was great. I mean, we were talking to, it was sales leaders. And the unique part about IKEA, which is a obviously global company, is all of their instructions are just pictures. No words, just pictures. The irony is I brought that example up in our presentation and a leader raised her hand and she said, they also have wildly lower return rates. And it's because we're all looking at it and sort of mutually agreeing on the thing that I'm going to get and what it's going to look like and how I put it together, my expectations are more aligned. So when you extrapolate that out to, especially in these complex sales, right, working with your internal teams to figure out what are we going to do so we are all on the same page of what comes out of this. And then the customer also in the engagement, when we use it in those interactions, also feels more aligned to what they're going to get, which means everybody's pretty much more satisfied along the way, all because there's a unifying universal language. And it's so fascinating to me because, again, it's new world, but it really does make quite the difference.
Yeah, I agree. And I was going to say pictures are worth 1,000 words. And that's how you can help communicate and cut down on some of this like telephone, is because if you're aligned with your executive leaders around the strategy, now not only is your team aligned at the top, but as we go communicate that down, there's going to be more and more people that are going to be fully aligned because they're able to see the whole visual of the picture and the strategy. And so that was one of the things from my previous experience and that I brought into here as well, is it helped me kind of more so educate with AEs. What are we trying to do here? And why is this marketer asking you about these events that they want to bring people to, or this gifting, you know, campaign that they want to run, and gives them a little bit of ownership within that execution and within that strategy development. And so that's another way that you start to build this trust with people and make sure that there's nothing lost in that kind of game of telephone.
Yeah. Even more tactically. So the thing that brings this all together is what's the journey, right? What is the journey and how do we wrap this all around the journey? And to Chris's point, right, at certain stages of the journey, it's going to be more marketing heavy. At other stages, it'll be more sales heavy. And then we also know that people talk to salespeople and then they go to other channels to validate what the salesperson told them. So then we're all on base. So we got to make sure whatever you're saying, we can back up so it'll make you look good and we build trust with the customer. But back to the idea of journey, right? So like thinking about how we use Mural is you have the customer journey map. Then you're talking about swim lanes and tactics. And so back to the idea of building trust by knowing what's going to happen and being clear on who owns which piece and what does good look like. I think that's really important too. Like Chris and I talk about this all the time with our funnel. It's like, okay, cool. Congrats on the leads. Congrats on the pipeline. But we still need more. And that's by being able to look at it We eliminate surprises, right? Surprises were really cool when we were five. They're not so much fun in daily life right now. Like, I don't want to be shot by scouts. Yeah, in your forecast video, you don't want surprises. But it helps where we can all point. And also, it's only, I think I've learned this too with these, especially launching new programs to sales folks or just even to an organization in general, is it's only important to you when it's important to you. So I don't care if marketing did the like rollout meeting on a Monday. Until your account is being impacted, you're like, yeah, sounds great, cool. Once your account is in the mix, you want to know, but you're also like, I have no idea. I can't even remember. So the Vax's idea of artifact is, all right, how do I educate myself? How do I self-soothe and look at what's going on? And then if I have questions, I can reach out. And then again, coming in a little bit educated that way also sort of bridges the gap of, I didn't not care. I just don't remember. It was a while ago. And being able to then ask a more pointed question versus, can you tell me about this ABM thing? Nobody really gets anywhere with that question. So it's being able to have that center of truth where everyone can align together, but also where is the customer? I love when we can all get on the same page of where is the customer, and that's where we're all oriented, because the customer does not care about our teams and our metrics and all that. And quite frankly, they shouldn't, right? They should feel like this is one cohesive brand experience, because that's how they'll treat it.
Yeah. Sounds, again, we get a lot at the leadership level. We then do the work to visualize that strategy. We roll it out, recognizing that, and I say this lovingly, half the room probably won't pay attention on the first pass. And that's nothing against them. They just have a lot of
hate.
Yeah, it's just reality. But making it to where it's easy accessible to reference back to, and ensuring that they're not just like, hey, can you just do it again? One of our actual organizational habits at Scrappy ABM is look before you ask. So we try to create great Google Drive hierarchy, a great ClickUp instance for project management, so that everyone has the ability to find the things they need to do their job, so they don't spend half their job finding the things they need to do their job. And I think if every organization just adopted that approach of making it easily accessible to find information on things that were previously presented, recognizing everybody's going to have 100% retention the first time they heard it, I think that's a really helpful piece that I think everybody can walk away with.
Yeah. Not only that, but we've been talking about, so yes, I want to have that for somebody when they have a question. But what if I answer your question before you even have it? And what are the collaborative moments that we should all come together again? When do we anticipate we should probably regroup? There should be enough data for us to glean some insights here. Or we, you know, it's the responsibility of Chris and I to have a good temp of our teams to be like, all right, I think we need to get everybody together, maybe like get on the same page. So all of these tools have to be tied to some sort of core process, right? In the same way that we're tying ABM to the customer journey, this whole idea of, all right, this is our plan. We're going to brainstorm. We're going to do it. We visualize it. Awesome. Then we're going to go. We're going to look at the data. Great. We're going to come back. And a lot of these things are like, you know, again, proven methodologies. We use Luma and mix some of these methods so that we can brainstorm, refine, move forward. I think what I have found in talking to not even just our customers, but people in GTM functions is, it's not often that that's a defined process. Like, I can tell you the marketing process and sales knows their sales process, but when does the GTM team come together to promote that type of efficiency?
Yeah. And I think everybody struggles with like how to get that information to people, because it's, you know, seven times seven different ways. And so before they're going to, you know, comprehend it. And so I think giving them not only like the on-demand access, but then, as Christina said, like these rituals and these kind of moments in time to come back as a team back to the huddle and say, okay, what's working, what's not working, where can we improve as we think about the next play? And so building those into your framework and building those rituals into the way that you guys work and the way that you do business is really, really important in making sure that these strategies are effective. Because if you don't have those moments to reflect, or you don't have those moments to say in a real honest way that this isn't working or this is working, we should do more, you're just going to continue to do stuff that doesn't work or continue to be misaligned.
One of the sessions at this conference that I just came from was ABM. And one of the frequent questions was, how do I talk to marketing? Like, legitimately, just add that as basic as that. And I think that, I mean, that's part of why I go back to process. Process feels a little medical, but how do we get these folks relating better to each other? How do we build the relationship, first of all? I mean, and so even by virtue of saying, okay, it's time to get the crew together again, even just that and having some operational rhythm there is really important. And then again, like a shared artifact that we're all working on together, that we all have our fingerprints on, because we've shown that that actually contributes to buy-in. So if you made something together, maybe it's not as scary to go talk or ask a question, because it's been a systemic challenge since I have even started for my first day in this business. And, you know, I get it. We're all different. I mean, people have the same feedback on, you know, how do I go talk to technology or product? We're all a little different, but that makes it interesting. But this idea of everybody collaborating on this thing, this plan, and being able to leverage methods that we know are going to result in buy-in and decision-making and next step, then there is no better feeling. I don't know about you all, and maybe this is just how much of a dork I am, but there is no better feeling getting out of a meeting and being like, God, we are so on it. Like, we are all aligned. We are swimming in the right direction. And that's like euphoric, and it drives engagement. And that's what we want, because the opposite is not fun.
Yeah.
So we want that part.
And you hit on something really important, I think, which is, not only does it have to be built into the rituals of like how you do business and some of the frameworks that you do, but you've also got to make it human, right? And so some tactics I've used when I'm getting into new teams and trying to build alignment around this stuff is really starting with like icebreakers. I think, you know, a lot of times we overlook this really critical step to start the relationships and start to get people to talking and thinking about like how they can work better together. Is make it more human. Take 5 minutes at the beginning of the meeting to do a fun icebreaker to get to know each other, and then get into the way that we're having conversations about what's working, what's not working. And I found when you do that, not only do you build better, more trusting relationships between your sales and marketing leadership teams, but the individual reps, the, you know, people that are down on the ground doing the work, and it builds like this culture where people are not afraid to communicate when things aren't going well. Because that's pretty much the downfall that I've seen, is you don't want to communicate when it's going not well. And when it's going well, you want to over communicate and kind of bloat it up. And so that erodes trust, that erodes the ability to actually like get things done.
I'm going to out myself as this is a leader memo where I was not the best leader. I didn't do anything, but I had some not great thoughts. She had to move her. And I had one team member that was like, yeah, I spent like an hour and a half just like hanging out and chatting with my counterpart. And I was like, that is so radically inefficient. And we're a services business. So that is non-billable hours. But I paid for two team members to spend 3 hours collectively to do zero revenue generating work. Mm-hmm. So at first I was like, man, that sucks. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with 5 dysfunctions of a team from Patrick Lencioni. But one of them is the inability to have conflict. And conflict is, from a dysfunction perspective, like healthy conflict is a really good thing. And the only way that you have healthy conflict is relationship, equity, and capital that has been developed over time. Because if the only times you hear from someone are, hey, this sucks, like, I'm not getting what I need from you, really hard to like that. Whereas, to your point, when they're not just a box on the other side of a Zoom meeting, but they're actually someone, for example, that we're recording this before Memorial Day, I am confident there are a couple of people on the team, because we have a bunch of smokers on our team. Not, that was a weird way to say it, but we have a bunch of people that will smoke meats this weekend. We'll probably talk about like what they're doing, because that's something that we do every year too. So just like little things like that can actually
ways to relate.
And one of the things that I really love about our team is that in Slack, the random channel is our actually most active channel, because people are very openly sharing things that their kids are doing. And like, it's been a great way for us to actually develop relationships in a remote environment. Have you ever worked with a marketing agency where things went perfectly every single time? Of course not. We're not perfect. Sorry.
Yeah. But we're perfect. I think, the idea of ABM and what we're trying to do, right, is to deliver a great customer experience. And I'll never forget, someone brought up an example that the most frequent and consistent touch point that your customer gets from you is the invoice. And I mean, nothing like a mic drop impact statement. And you're like, yep. So I can understand why you might not feel connected to me and the brand if all I do is ask you for money on a consistent basis. But I think if we, again, if you can put it into the perspective of, hey, we're really trying to demonstrate partnership and deliver value to the customer, because that's not the type of business nor the partner we want to be. We want to be like everybody else. And now you've got this like mutual North Star that everybody's stomping towards. And programs like these are certainly that. I mean, it sounds, everybody's like, just spin up ABM. Okay. Yeah. You can spin it up when you've determined all of these very strategical that are really big GTM and business questions. And that's half of the reason why a lot of these programs or a lot of the marketing doesn't do well. And that's, I mean, Chris and I have been plugging away even right now at trying to, great, we're gonna define some ICPs. Super. We're going to define some personas. Amazing. Let's talk about industry cohorts. Cool. Now I want, what do they do for fun on the weekends? Like what music do they listen to? And I think B2B has historically not been great at intimately understanding their customers, like B2C brands. Like I can remember vividly being at one of those like big conferences where you'd see a big food and bev brand and they're like, did you know that our buyers are moms and they eat out once a week and they typically listen to country music and they shop at this place? And I always was envious of that because, God, how much more relevantly could I speak to you or even serve you as a customer if I knew that? And I think that's the exciting part of where we're seeing, you know, B2B and programs like this go, because you have to. Otherwise, I mean, Chris has heard me say this, beige is not good, right? It goes with everything, which means it goes, nobody remembers it. And we don't want to be that. We want to show you that A, we care enough to get to know you, and B, we're smart enough to put that to good use.
I sure remember that before I wore my beige shirt to this.
Grage. It's a grage. But see, great for paint. Goes with everything that you guys want to put on the wall.
One of the things you touched on earlier is working closely with sales and giving them a couple of insights on their customers and making sure that we're all driving towards same goals. Again, I agree with you philosophically. Sometimes this does break down in practice, though, because I've seen it happen. Like you run a closed loss program that like really crushes it, and suddenly you've got pipeline, and then you're like, okay, we like shot the shot. Like we only have so many things that we can do to dramatically activate demand today. The board's like, man, killer quarter. Let's raise the goal for the next one. And you're like, that was it. That was the shot. How do you guys effectively balance that need for short-term support while also not diminishing the need for, we have a longer term goal that we have to accomplish?
Anybody who, especially when you're working in a high growth company, right? I don't think anybody can tell you that it's balanced all the time and that they've figured that out, because the reality is sometimes you do need, I lovingly call that juicing the levers. Sometimes you got to juice and you got to do what you got to do. Part of that is managing expectations and giving context. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the reality is like, cool, thanks for the story. Do it again. Okay. That's, you know, pressure is a privilege and we'll figure it out together, but it's not easy. And I hope that every program repeats those impacts every single time, because then Chris would be super happy. And I love repeatable motions. And I think that's what we're trying to get to, right? We're very much in the storming and norming right now. Let's try some stuff. Let's see what sticks. We've got some things that are, you know, tried and trusted over, you know, the past years of go-to-market with Mural and some of the things that Chris has already kind of proven with his team. But when you're talking to a different audience, we're experimenting. And some of those experiments hit and some are like, maybe we'll do something else. But I think if you're lucky enough to have leadership who understand that that's the nature of the business is testing is great. It's great if you learn, but you learn fast. And failure is a learning too. Choosing what not to do is just as valuable as knowing what to scale. But it's not easy because while we say that, also seeing that something failed, you're like, oh, crap. Now what?
Yeah. And I think the more that you can make this, like, ideas are not personal, right? Like, ideas are ideas to try to get us to the goal. And so when it is a failure, it's not like, Christina, you failed. Like, what are you going to do to fix it? Yeah. It's like, okay, well, that didn't work. Like, let's figure out what we can go do differently to make it work. And I've seen that that helps with alignment, especially when things do work really well. Then the goals get raised the next quarter. I mean, I think that's just inevitable in every business, right? We all want to grow every quarter, but it makes it less personal. And it makes it like, okay, if we had to do that, how would we do it? Let's try some things. We might fail, but at least we tried and we probably got farther along than we would have if we didn't try.
Yeah.
So I think it all starts with the ability to like have the trust and not make it a personal attack on the idea of the person and more of like a critical on the idea.
And to Chris's point, like, let's all brainstorm some ideas, right? Let's all get some skin in the game and try a lot of stuff. I always love to say some of these are not going to work. Expect it. So that when we get there and we're like, yep, here it is, the one that didn't work, we move on. And we take the things that kind of worked and say, can we make them better? Is that something we can salvage? But I do think that making it back to this idea of this collaborative effort of we all come to the table with a different perspective of what might be the thing. Let's try all of them. That's pretty cool. But let's do it in a very fast and scalable way where we can get enough directional data to say this is enough of an MVP for us to maybe take the next step in investing. And that means we have time and money, right? It doesn't always have to be budget. We want sales to be always on the floor, on the phones. So taking their time to me is always the last thing I want to do until something is really, really proven out. But having them be part of it in some cases, that upfront investment is worth it, you know.
Totally. And that actually reminded me of something like one of my favorite leaders that I've worked with. He had a leadership principle, which was like take off to landing. And what it essentially means is like when you're working with these teams and you're trying to build these relationships, people want to be involved from the beginning all the way to the end, whether it was a failure or a win. And the more that you can kind of co-create and co-collaborate on these things, to your point, people will have more ownership in the idea. And it is more collaborative and aligned around like, what are we trying to do? And when we fail, we all failed and we do better next time, not a person or a team.
Yeah, this concept of co-creation, I think I've said the word every day this week. It's not a new concept, right? It's like, hey, work together, do stuff in a team environment. But so much of the biz, especially in software, there's no way to do it without co-creating. But I think you have to be intentional and say, this is the way we do things. We co-create. And then at some point it gets to the, you know, this person takes it over the line and makes the decision, what have you. But it's not an easy, it's the thing that's necessary to do business in today's environment. And it's the hardest thing to do because now you've got a lot of different people involved. And so that just means like coordinating and again, the ways of communicating. Some people are very vocal and some people are wallflowers. And how do you co-create in an efficient way? And that's, you know, sort of where we, in terms of like the roadmap and where we want Mural and see it going is how are we empowering those moments to be the most effective and efficient so you can go faster to market and get that co-creation stamp at every point.
Yeah. And I mean, not to do too much selling here, but like that's where the methods and the things that we talked about around your operating cadence come into play because if you have those moments, not only are you getting that co-collaboration happening between the teams, but, you know, unlike your kind of conference room experience, Mason, right? Like where you had to write do not erase on the whiteboard and whoever came in might erase it or might not. You've got this ability to have people speak up, right? They might not normally have spoken up. And so now you have more ideas because people are, you know, it's not just who's the loudest in the room. It's like, we're going to do this really intentional brainstorming activity to get all the ideas out. And we're going to do it in private mode so that we can actually have everybody not feel threatened by the idea and just share the ideas, right? And so I think there's some really unique ways to use visual collaboration, you know, tools like ours to really foster better ideas and more of this alignment around some movement.
I'm curious, Mason, are you familiar with the DISC assessment? So I love DISC, and a million years ago I took it, and especially when I was like a little product owner and working with lots of different types of personalities. And I think when you look at GTM, I mean, you've got representation around the full wheel there. And part of what, I mean, Chris's example just showed that when you're talking to like more like engineering, analytically minded folks who are usually at the S and the C, they believe that by telling you all the things that could potentially go wrong, like they're being good partners. And that sounds so noble. And in the moment, it's, you know, it feels like just, man, let me go, let me run. I'm a D. I'm all about the action and the movement, and I want to go. And if you could stop slowing this down, that'd be super. But if you think about in the context of like a visual environment where someone can kind of add a few sticky notes on, have you considered just the delivery? I would love to know 5 ways that you think this is going to totally tank so we don't do it and we don't fail further than we need to, right? Learning's good, but if we're going to invest money, let's not do that. If we all are sitting there going, I know that this is probably not going to work, but I don't want to speak up because I'm an S and this is a D person communicating. And that's the beauty of it, is you can say, I hadn't considered that. Or maybe I had, and here's why I think the like relative payoff of trying is worth it. And now everybody's sort of on the same page, and you're actually getting, my biggest fear is that there's that unsaid truth that never makes its way to the top of these decision-making meetings because of that reason. And this curates a little bit of more that like psychologically safe zone that people can give their feedback.
I just want to go back to the idea around these different experiments. I think it was in Udi's new book, or I saw it as a quote on LinkedIn, but it's not called trial and success. So there are things that are going to fail. There will be errors that occur. But also, we kicked this off by asking, how are you using your past experience in ABM to implement an ABM program here? The beauty of hiring really talented people is they bring past failures, so you don't have to repeat the same mistakes. And if they don't speak up about those past failures, you're paying twice. So
nobody wants to pay twice.
So really what I want to do is just quickly recap, because there's a lot that we talked through on that. And main things I'm walking away from are, one, yes, and forgive me for saying it this bluntly, but sales will need short-term results because we have to deliver for this quarter. And the analogy that I always, or not analogy, but it's the example that I always give marketers is, when we wake up on a Monday with an empty calendar, we're excited because it's all this white space to do creative work. But when a salesperson wakes up on Monday with an empty calendar, they're like, I'm not going to be able to feed my family. And those are just
analogy.
Yeah, panic.
That's burning. Yeah, but terrifying. Yeah. So like, cool. And we don't recognize that, then
we
just cannot empathize as well. So I think it's, one, recognizing that sales will need meetings in the short term. It's also communicating consequences. And Kristen, I think you said it well. Sometimes those consequences won't be adhered to. People will just say, that's fine. And the thing that I really appreciated about how you both walked through it is co-creation. Because if we co-create the program together for how we actually achieve the result, it's really hard to throw blame at one team or the other. Like, we ran it together from the start. And as a result, we went together, we lost together. If we lost together, what was the trial and error? And how do we do it better next quarter? If we won together, awesome. How do we repeat this? So last question for both of you. Again, you guys now live a lot. And Chris, it's very apparent what you do for a living. You're pretty good at it. But you go through a space of, how do we help people visualize and actually like work better together? So as you're thinking about specifically account-based marketing, is there any parting wisdom that you would offer the audience on how to just get started and making sure that the team is aligned in order to execute a program effectively?
First off, like, alignment around who you're going after what problem you solve for them. A lot of companies, I think, you know, struggle with this. And so if you're trying to get this, just go quickly go in and get scrappy about it, answer those two questions and find accounts that look like that, right? And then get your teams in a room and talk about what's our strategy to get into these accounts. And it's that simple. I mean, it's funny because I was having this conversation earlier today as well. It's like everything I do on a daily basis, I learned when I was an SDR, because it's really just a bigger version of that. It's building my territory plan and aligning around accounts. It's tiering those accounts out and, you know, coming up with a strategy for the different tiers. And at its most simple form, you know, ABM is that, just on a bigger scale for your business. And so I think just, you know, go think about it from a super simplistic way of who are we trying to reach? What problem do we solve for them? And what are the accounts that we are focused on together to go do that? And then just go try stuff. That's the best way to get started.
Christine, anything to add? That's pretty well said.
To his point about try stuff, start small and go get real creepy about the users. Go get everything you know about them. Like we were even, I mean, we have a customer event tonight and, you know, we're thinking about who would have a really rich conversation if we sat them next to each other, right? Like, where are their backgrounds? Where did they go to school? Like all that basic stuff. But, you know, this person seems to love this topic. Maybe this person could give, you know, some added insights since they're, you know, a retired board member or what have you. So I think to me, this is exciting because ABM programs, when they're small and they're that targeted, are the beauty of the art and the science of marketing of like, yes, I can pull all the firmographics. I can pull all of the demographics. But at the end of the day, this is really getting back to the humans. And how am I relating my solution back to your pain? Because at the end of the day, people buy for pain. They rarely buy for this prospect of happiness over, I have a challenge and I have pain right now. I have to solve this first. That's where you can start to really surprise and delight a customer, like giving them a parting gift or a note or even just bringing something up that they go, oh my gosh, how did you know that? Or, wow, that's really valuable. Or I'm so glad I met this person, because somebody who has an experience like that is going to take a call. And it doesn't have to be like, maybe someone's just going to talk to Chris about, you know, beige interior design. And they're really like, I totally get it. I love beige so much. And I talked to Chris all night and he gave me some awesome swatches. And I thank you. And I would love to talk to you guys about this whole visual alignment thing. That's what we're going for. It gives you the ability to really, really get impactful. And then the next part is like, cool, how do we scale it? And then you have to make that decision.
And I was going to say that kind of brought up, you've got to almost take the, you know, venture capitalist mindset of investments where you're like, one of these is going to come out of 10. Right. And in the beginning, I think you can expect that. But the more you get to know your audience, the more you get to know these individuals. And, you know, to Christina's point, are able to delight them in some way. Now you go to 5 out of 10 or 6 out of 10 of those experiments and you start to really scale up.
Yeah. Can I just share one random thing of this? So we were at this conference and we did a luncheon, right? And a luncheon at these conferences, right? Sounds pretty like transactional. So we share the content. It was great. Like people really reacted well to it. And there was a gentleman that came up to me afterwards and he started talking about business. And I said, can I ask you a question about today? And he said, how is the food? And he's like, no one has ever asked me that. And I said, well, you know, you joined us for a meal. If you were coming to my house, I would want to know, did you enjoy the food? And he said, I had seconds. I mean, that's half of the way. Like I stayed so long and then the content was so good. He said, I walked out of the luncheon today. So like just little things like that, like that makes me so happy. It's the human part of our job where you're just like, don't forget, like these are people. Did you enjoy this food while I was trying to share with you my very important global study data? So it's just, it's a lot of fun.
Love it. Yeah. I was at an event yesterday. One of the CROs on my target account list was there. I had been at an event with her previously. I remember she ordered an old fashioned. So what did I do? We were walking together and I was like, hey, can I go grab you an old fashioned? She was like, you remember that was my drink from 6 months ago? And I was like, an old fashioned too. Like, it's, I got the full inside scoop on everything going on. And we got a meeting booked just because the little details that people sometimes overlook. So couldn't agree more. I'm going to put you on the spot because Chris and I do this for a living. So doing fun to have more about Mural.
where would you point them?
You know, I'm going to tell you the website first, certainly, mural.co, but also in the spirit of human, reach out to Chris and I. I'd love to talk to you about it. One of the things I love doing most is really just asking GTM folks, like, how do you do it today? We say this all the time, like, how can we muralize your process? How do we translate it into this co-creation, collaborative, central operating system type thing? But first, let's start with, like, what do you do today? I mean, in my past lives of stealth software, software is only going to scale your current state. So if your current state is not great and it's painful, let's start there and figure out, do we need to start with how the methods and the process is working, or do you need a process? Let's start with that strategic discussion. And then, yeah, like, software is great. Let's go scale it so that everyone from the exact level all the way to the IC is using that. I mean, and now with, like, things like AI, I mean, you've got an assistant every step of the way taking you to the next step. Let's make steps of what we want to happen. So yeah, you can go browse at your leisure at mural.co, or you can chat with us and we'll wax poetic about it.
I love it. Thank you guys so much for joining me today on this panel. Thanks everybody for being here, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
Thanks, Nathan. This was fun.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.